Justice for the human family, we demand it. Justice, truth, freedom, equality's a must. Thus, decolonization of the planet, so bust this. People be the power, now we build the justice. Pouring at system divinations, how we build the justice. Welcome the planet to the podcast, build the justice. Build the justice, build the justice, build. Is to add on or do away with justice.
Welcome to Building Justice, a podcast by Sacramento State Center on Race, Immigration, and Social Justice. Our acronym is CRISJ. We explore critical issues affecting our communities with the hopes of creating a healthier and more just world. I'm Monica Tuchka, your host for today, and I'm a political science professor at Sacramento State. My guests for today are Dr. Corrine McIntosh-Sacco and Liz Blum. Dr. Sacco is a Sac State alumna with a master's degree and a doctoral degree in psychology. She's a licensed clinical psychologist and a licensed marriage and family therapist. Dr. Sacco also serves as the chairperson of the Sacramento County Mental Health Board, and she's the current president of Sacramento Valley Psychological Association. Liz Blum is the co-founder of Decarcerate Sacramento, a coalition working to prevent jail expansions, to decrease jail populations, and to shift county funds away from policing and incarceration towards community-based systems of care that promote community safety and community health. She has a master's degree in community development from UC Davis. Liz is also an appointed member of the Public Safety and Justice Agency Advisory Committee. That's a mouthful. Let me welcome both of you to the podcast and invite you to say something to our listeners. Yeah, Corrine, how about you go first?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. Longtime listener, first time participant.
That's fantastic. Liz, how about you?
Thanks for having us on. Happy to be here.
I am so happy to be here and really excited too. So let me start. Let me ask you something about your personal story. You know, what led you to advocate against incarceration in Sacramento? And how have you been involved in decarceration efforts so far? How about we start with you, Liz?
Yeah, thank you for that question. That is, that's a big one. I really consider this my life's work. And that really started about 10 years ago when my sibling was experiencing a mental health crisis and was incarcerated in a county jail for the first time. And that experience as having a loved one go through that trauma and that violence that really exacerbated his mental illness, you know, that's really what drove me to this advocacy work. So since then, I've worked on the state level with organizations like CURB. I've worked inside of women's prisons and other prisons throughout the state. But about 3 years ago, over 3 years ago in 2019, a group of folks and I learned that Sacramento County was planning to expand one of its jails and at the same time planning to cut funding to a bunch of critical services in the county. And so about a dozen people came together to form Decarcerate Sacramento. And our goals ever since have been to prevent jail expansions and to reduce incarceration as a solution and to shift county funding away from these harmful systems and towards public health and vital life-affirming services.
Liz, thanks for sharing your story. I know sometimes it can be hard to talk about loved ones who have mental illnesses or when oneself is going through a mental illness. And so thanks for sharing that. And I'm really glad that that motivated you to get involved in such an important movement and to be a founder of Decarcerate Sacramento. Corrine, how about you? What led you? What's your personal story about getting involved in decarceration efforts? And what's your history with this movement?
Yeah, thank you for that question. When I look back on my career, seeing how I started as a marriage and family therapist trainee working with foster youth. So they were primarily youth of color, and they had been taken away from their parents due to some type of involvement with the law enforcement system, and seeing the effects of trauma that lasts long after the child's placed with a new adoptive family. Also, in doing my pre-doctoral internship, I sought placement at a juvenile prison facility in Stockton. And again, seeing an overrepresentation of youth of color that had been involved in child welfare system and had extensive histories of trauma. And being able to see inside of a prison, being there as a psychological trainee, not ever really learning what my role was supposed to be. How do I help someone be treated in such a traumatic environment? So personally, that was my experience. Social justice values have always aligned with me, but didn't quite know what to do with this passion, what to do with this knowledge, until I came across Decarcerate Sacramento's mission and felt like that was a really good fit for me to be able to use my personal and professional energies to get involved with the decriminalization of mental illness.
Kareen, thank you for sharing your story and talking a little bit about foster youth and just the trauma associated with family separations. I know there's a lot of conversations around that within advocates who are fighting for immigration reform, and people are talking about that with respect to wars in Ukraine. And we just need to center how important it is to keep healthy families intact. And if a family needs to separate, how we can support everyone who is experiencing that trauma. Let me move to another question, and that is, you know, I hear in the news all the time more and more talk about the need for law and order, more and more chants about locking people up. Seems these kinds of messages are getting louder, and you are both really pushing back against these messages. And I've heard you already talk about how prisons are traumatic environments and they exacerbate mental illness. So can you tell the audience why you think locking more people up is really the wrong approach? What are the conditions like in jails and prisons in California? And how does incarceration impact not only incarcerated people, but also their loved ones and society at large? So the question, you know, why is locking more people up the wrong approach?
Yeah.
Sorry, Liz, let's start with you.
Sure. Yeah, thank you so much for that question. We really do have to address these really harmful rhetorics that are really taking a strong hold on mainstream media. And the first thing I'll say is that locking people up is not preventing crime. It's not preventing harm in communities. It's what happens after someone is arrested for an alleged crime. And first of all, I think we can't talk about this without talking about who's in our jail right now. And that's 83% of people in the Sacramento County jail system have not been convicted of anything. We have a constitutional right to be presumed innocent until proven guilty, whether you like it or not. You know, and I would want that right personally if I were ever accused of a crime. And I'll also say, I know that this is a really emotional topic, right? Because when we're thinking about some of the worst crimes that can occur, you know, there's that fear and that desire for someone to be punished. And I would say I'm not naive to the harm that our communities can experience.
I think if locking people up was so successful, we wouldn't have the problems we do. We wouldn't have the statistics that we have. I think that as far as the population inside our nation's jails and prisons with mental illness, there's a huge overrepresentation that 2 in 5 people who are incarcerated have a history of mental illness. And that doesn't mean that mental illness is going to lend oneself to doing something criminal. I think it shows that our society has been set up is a lot of our psychiatric facilities in the community have been defunded. And we can go back to in the Reagan era and defunding a lot of the community mental health centers, which put strains on state hospitals. And also at the same time, we saw a huge growth in the jail and prison population. Because of that, America's jails and prisons have become de facto mental health providers. And that comes at a great cost to the well-being of not just the people inside, but also their loved ones who oftentimes aren't able to have any contact with them for extended periods of time. And that these individuals with mental health conditions are in the care and custody of folks whose education doesn't extend past a high school diploma. So they're not mental health professionals, they're custodians given power by a law enforcement agency.
When I think about jails and prisons right now, I think about overcrowding. I think about solitary confinement. I think about routine exposure to violence. Mm-hmm. I've heard this term post-incarceration syndrome. I think about unjust power structures between the custodians within the jails and the inmates themselves. Can you talk about how that damages incarcerated people and how that has lingering effects after they leave jail or prison? Liz, how about you?
I guess I would reframe and acknowledging that I don't know. I don't want to say people are damaged. I think, you know, that's
absolutely
people are still whole. I think I'll just say, you know, I can only speak from my life. Yeah, it's trauma. Prisons and jails reproduce the trauma, right? And they're violent places. And if we're, you know, just using caging human beings as a response to alleged crimes or harm, it really reproduces harm. And one thing that I always come back to is that many people might not know that California actually carried out the largest prison building project in the entire world. From 1982 to 2002, we built more prisons here at a faster rate than anywhere else in the world ever. And so if building prisons and jails made us safer, California would be the safest place in the world.
Yeah, those are staggering statistics to think that California, which prides itself sometimes on being very progressive, is not progressive on this issue. And the amount of money that must be made in building prisons must have something to do with what is incentivizing their construction. Can you say something about sort of some demographic data about who is currently incarcerated? Are the jail rates in California comparable to other counties with a similar size? Who are our incarcerated neighbors?
Sure. Well, in Sacramento County, it's no different from what's happening throughout the state and across the country, as we covered, that the jails are being overly relied upon in dealing with folks that have mental health conditions or maybe experiencing a mental health crisis. So that trend tracks. However, Sacramento County incarcerates individuals with mental health conditions at a rate 47% higher than other comparable sized counties in our state. Recent data from the Sacramento County Sheriff's Office shows that people inside the jails that have a mental health diagnosis and receive mental health services during incarceration comprise 63% of the average daily population. That's over 2,000 individuals in the jail, thus making the Sacramento County jail system one of the largest behavioral health providers in our county, which is a service it's not designed to provide. And as you had mentioned previously, the conditions inside jails, such as overcrowding and solitary confinement and the violence, for someone that is detained in the jails without a mental health condition, can certainly they can develop one because of the conditions inside the jails. And if for those coming in with mental health conditions, right, those conditions inside the jails can exacerbate their mental health issues in the forms of increased anxiety, depression, hypervigilance, difficulty emotionally regulating, and even suicidality. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes when people are released from being incarcerated, they're more challenged in their functioning than they were before they went in, and have higher rates of disability than people in the population who didn't experience incarceration.
Mm-hmm. Liz, do you want to add something to sort of talking about the demographics or the population within Sacramento County jails and California prisons in general?
Yeah, I appreciate what Corrine has shared so far. Just what Corrine just said, you know, what's the solution? 62% of our jails are diagnosed with mental illness. So what's the solution? It's to fund mental health diversion and prevention and community-based mental health care, right? What's this, you know, we know that 83% of our jail population is pre-trial, has not been convicted of anything. I have friends inside who are just awaiting trial for many, many, many years. And there's no evidence. It's really, really unjust. And so what's the solution? Expanding non-law enforcement pre-trial release and diversion programs. One other big thing that I think, you know, is important to talk about is that 40% of people booked in the jails are not booked for new, do not involve new crimes. So they're for warrant and rule violations. So if someone, you know, couldn't pay a ticket or couldn't show up for court or couldn't charge an ankle monitor or couldn't show up for a probation class. And so we're really criminalizing poverty. We're criminalizing, you know, making a simple mistake, not breaking the law. And so you know, we need to change that warrant process. We need to do very real policy changes to reduce the amount of people that are ever ending up in our jail. And we also know that the majority of people are being released, like booked and released very quickly. So they should have never been booked in the first place. We know 55% of people who are booked, like arrested and booked in the jail, are released within 3 days. 70% are released within 10 days. Mm-hmm. And they're released with nothing. And I don't know if you've ever walked out or driven past the downtown main jail on I Street. But every time I am outside of the jail, my heart breaks. Like seeing folks released like without shoes, without a warm coat, without anything. And the county has the county's total budget is over $7 billion. And yet there's no process in place. It's like we have the funding to do that, but there's been no prioritization of a jail discharge or reentry process that ensures basic dignity for people who are being released. There's no bus passes provided. Often people are released without ability to charge their phones. Say that these are just very concrete examples of how we can work to reduce our jail population and prevent people from being incarcerated in the first place.
Liz, I think it's so important for you to share with the audience these personal stories and personal observations. I live within walking distance of the main jail, and I do every night walk my dog, and I observe some of the same things that you're talking about. And to think about these statistics, you know, 83% of people in jail not being convicted yet and having their rights violated and their basic liberties denied, and to think 63% of our incarcerated neighbors have a mental health diagnosis, 27% of those have a serious mental health illness like borderline personality disorder or schizophrenia or PTSD or bipolar. I mean, these are folks who seriously need help, and they don't need to be placed in solitary confinement or to be within a culture of violence. And there needs to be not only reform inside prisons, but reform so that folks don't go to prison in the first place through these diversion programs. Corrine, can I ask you a question that the Sacramento Board, County Board of Supervisors is going to be considering on December 7th, 2022? I know they're going to be talking about and maybe voting on whether or not to construct what's being called a mental health addition to the main jail downtown, whether that's a new tower or shell space. I mean, why is the Board of Supervisors thinking about building more jails when we've already heard that we have so many in California? Can you respond to that?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. I wish I knew. I wish I knew why they were considering it again. When this issue was just considered in March 2021, and at that time, a majority of the supervisors voted against it and had stated an explicit interest in wanting to look at alternatives to incarceration. Also, this is a board who, in November 2020, declared racism a public health crisis, and yet, although the population that identifies as Black or African American in Sacramento County is only 11%, they make up 30% of the population inside the Sacramento County jail. So it really doesn't make sense. What I can track it back to is a class action lawsuit that was brought against the County of Sacramento by over 4,000 people incarcerated in Sacramento County jails. This was back in 2018, I believe, and was settled in 2020, and it's called the Mays Consent Decree, that alleged a failure of Sacramento County to provide constitutionally required mental health and medical care to people in the jails, that they were imposing harsh and extreme solitary confinement conditions, and that disproportionately affected people with mental illness and also discriminated against people with disabilities. Because of the consent decree settlement, there are some requirements that the Sacramento County agreed to do, and that is having a significant reduction of the jail population and improving the conditions inside the jails, including access to mental health treatment. There have been ongoing monitoring reports in this time where there's court-appointed experts who come in and monitor the progress Sacramento County is making towards meeting compliance. And even in 2019, the county's budget allocated $14 million towards increasing staff and contracts and medical costs to improve the conditions in the jails. And yet, even with the extensive efforts set forth, progress toward consent decree compliance has been limited at best, and there is this sense of urgency. The county needs to do something to come into compliance, and they think that building a new tower to calling it a mental health correctional facility annex would somehow improve the mental health care that's delivered inside the jails.
Corrine, I'm hearing you say that Mays dissent decree did something good. It raised awareness about the injustices occurring within Sacramento jails and the rights that were being violated. And it is mandating really significant reform to improve jail conditions. And yet, if you went to the December 7th Sacramento County Board of Supervisors meetings, I would imagine that you would be advocating for alternative approaches rather than building more jails. So Liz, what is Decarcerate Sacramento proposing as an alternative to this idea of building more jails? What options do we as citizens or residents have that are not leading towards more incarceration?
Yeah, thanks for that question. So the reasoning behind this new jail building is really centered, the county's reasoning is really centered on this lawsuit, as Corrine said. And we know that this lawsuit needs to be, like, the core issues around this lawsuit are caused by the behavior of jail staff. And so a new building would simply expand the space that the same problems would occur in. I will say that there, the largest argument the county has is using to say that they need to build this new jail is that the current building can't meet ADA and HIPAA requirements. So that's the American with Disabilities Act. But we also know that the architectural firm that they've used to come to that conclusion is actually the same firm that was contracted to build the new jail and that actually built the current jail. And the study that they performed did not actually look into how the jail could be retrofitted in small ways to meet ADA requirements. And so one of the things we are calling on the county to do is to actually do a new independent architectural study that with the specific scope to examine options for meeting ADA and HIPAA in the current building and utilizing the other jail as needed, which is which has way less violations of constitutional ADA requirements. And so, sorry, just to throw that out there, because that's an important piece that the county is arguing. They're saying, well, you know, we want to reduce incarceration. They say they haven't implemented a plan, a real plan yet. We're pushing for them to do that. But they are really leaning on these legal requirements, which we are not disagreeing with, right? We do want to reduce the number of people we incarcerate. And we understand that the county needs to comply with this lawsuit. And at the same time, we run a jail, Decarcerate Sacramento runs a jail hotline, and we also do visiting with many people in the jail. So we're constantly hearing about conditions in the jail and constant ADA violations that have nothing to do with the jail building itself, right? So we know that people with mental illness, that's a disability, right? And we know, like, people are being taunted by sheriff's deputies. They're being put in, like, the lawsuit specifically requires the county jail staff to not use of force against people for behavior that stems from their mental illness, and that is unfortunately continuing. So just to conclude, like, just a new building will not prevent people with disabilities from being treated the way they're being treated.
You're talking about changing the culture within jails and advocating for, you know, associating dignity and respect to marginalized members of our community, which include people with disabilities, which include folks who have mental illnesses, and that should be something that the entire county wraps its head around and embraces. We are all human beings and we have fundamental rights. In terms of next steps, you know, if you were talking to the Board of Supervisor members and you were saying, instead of building these prisons that are not going to actually lead to compliance with the Mays consent decree, I know I've heard you say something about diversion programs and community-based alternatives to incarceration and community services and support. You know, concretely, what does that look like, Corrine?
That looks like, one, really committing to making a commitment to focusing and prioritizing alternatives to incarceration. And other counties that have had federal consent decrees against them because of the conditions inside the jails, they have adopted a care first, jails last policy resolution that values a comprehensive continuum of care for individuals with mental illness, substance use, and co-occurring disorders rather than incarceration. So that's really it's making a formal declaration that this county is committed to honoring the dignity of those individuals and not relying on the criminal legal system for that. And more than just words on paper, but backing up that commitment with the fiscal priorities. So robustly funding alternatives. So when folks are in a mental health crisis, there's other places for them to go other than the jail. Right now, we have the Sacramento County Mental Health Treatment Center has an intake stabilization unit that receives their referral only based from law enforcement partners and hospital emergency rooms. But they're only getting 1 to 2 law enforcement referrals per month. And at the number of mental health crises that we have, the bloated jail population, that really anemic statistic tells me that there's a resource that's being underutilized. So being able to have agreement from all system partners that we're going to use this continuum of care, that care is first, right? And the jails are last. The Mental Health Board recently approved a set of recommendations that the Board of Supervisors are aware of that are calling on them to invest in building and operating a 24-hour assessment and intervention service center for law enforcement and first responder partners to divert people with behavioral health and substance use needs so they can get the care they need. We know this is possible. The Restoration Center in San Antonio, Texas has done it. And in the time it's been in operation, it's diverted 1,400 people each month from being arrested or having emergency room visits. And it's also saved their taxpayers over $96 million. Mm. So, and we're also asking for the county to prioritize funding for sub-acute care beds. So these oftentimes people in jail or in the acute psychiatric facilities will have nowhere to go. And they may be released and they are experiencing homelessness and for survival needs may end up engaging in behavior that gets the attention of law enforcement and they find themselves right back in the jail again. So being able to have treatment beds for folks to help them get stable, be able to meet their basic needs so they can experience improvement is really what we're calling on for Sacramento County Board of Supervisors. We have there was a study done by the RAND Institute in Sacramento County, found that we have a shortage of 253 subacute care beds. There's a current plan to build a 64 bed facility, but that leaves a shortage of 189 subacute care beds.
And we know that's an understatement because that study didn't include incarcerated people.
Right, right.
I know that, you know, at Sacramento State, we are trying to take a holistic approach to our students. And so we do have a lot of mental health services and all kinds of wellness services for our students. But I often wonder, if you're not enrolled at Sac State and you're of that age, where do you go? Or when you graduate, sometimes students are like, I've benefited so much from the services here provided on campus. But as soon as I'm no longer a student and I'm a graduate, how am I going to sustain my mental health, or how am I going to keep working on my substance abuse illnesses? And so it seems as though investing in community-based mental health centers and building that capacity to take care of people at the subacute level seems a dire need that we need to push for at the Sacramento County Board of Supervisors meetings. I know that Liz, you're also talking in with Decarcerate Sacramento about building affordable publicly owned housing. Can you say something about that? I know you need to go in a minute, but is there something you can say about the importance of publicly owned and publicly affordable housing?
Sure. Well, yeah, just, you know, and I really appreciate Corinne naming the mental health board's recommendations. They're very, very critical. There's so many, and that they definitely include building housing. And they include so many things. And I will say, if you go to if you go to our website, decarceratesac.org, we actually did a study where we interviewed folks who are in the jail, folks who are unhoused, folks who are being released, like really folks experiencing the brunt of this like under investment or lack of investment in public, like community-based care. We did that alongside our Community Care First Coalition. And so I will say that there are so many things that we need to invest in, but unfortunately the county, in terms of our general fund discretionary dollars, we spend over 70% on our law enforcement and carceral systems and courts, and almost 40% of the money that the board has discretion over is spent on the sheriff's department. And we know that the sheriff is elected and the board can't necessarily tell the sheriff's office what to do, but they do control their budget. They do have a choice on how we meet the consent decree. Do they give the sheriff another building, or do they say, no, we're going to have to make this work without a new jail? They have that choice. And so that's why I really hope that the folks listening to this, especially folks who live in Sacramento County, decide to speak up with us, because this is our public dollars. This is our tax dollars. This is funding that should be going to taking care of us, like our neighbors, our community. And instead it's being spent on criminalizing folks, and it's being spent on this, you know, these cages that are really producing more harm and violence. So on December 7th, the board will be voting. December 7th, 2022, the board will be voting on this. We urge people to show up to 700 H Street downtown. We will be there in mass with our yellow t-shirts on, making public comment and really, centering the voices inside the jails in all the ways that we can. You can also sign our petition, which is tinyurl.com/no-new-sac-jail. We have almost 1,000 signatures so far. We just really hope that folks will join us. So please, hope to see you there.
And for students or other folks that may not have participated in our local government process before, the thought of giving public comment may seem intimidating, or people might not know how to get started. And Decarcerate SAC does a wonderful job providing education, kind of demystifying the process, and even having toolkits and scripts with talking points to help people kind of know what are the important issues, how can we lift up what those impacted are saying that they need to improve the overall health of Sacramento.
Mm-hmm. If there's, one thing that I hear in both of your closing remarks is take action. Let's take action. December 7th is coming. Get down to the County Board of Supervisors meeting. Speak in public comment. Raise your voices. If there are some people who can't make that December 7th meeting, but they really care about this issue and they want to work alongside you in taking action against the construction of new jails, what are some other longer term initiatives they can get involved with if December 7th doesn't happen? Can you speak to those, that too?
Yeah, there's so many opportunities for folks. I can speak to Decarcerate Sacramento's opportunities with us. We We do inside outside organizing with many people who are currently incarcerated. We write letters, we visit folks, we provide mutual aid. We actually do a zine project. If you go to our website, decarceratesac.org, you can see our beautiful first zine project where we collect art from folks inside. So we're always welcoming new volunteers to help with our hotline and with our inside outside organizing. And there will be more future calls to action, really pressuring, like pushing our and educating our elected officials on why we need to shift our county's priorities. So yeah, please, you know, reach out decarceratesac@gmail.com. And we're also on all the social medias as well.
Corrine, how about you? Other ways to get involved beyond December 7th, but I'm hearing you that getting to just the December 7th meeting and speaking in public, an open forum is really important, but beyond that, some suggestions.
You know, even if folks can't show up in person, being sending an email to each county board of supervisor is important. I know at least one supervisor is very, very dedicated to reading his public comment. So it does get seen. So email is great. Signing the petition's great. They could even make comment via telephone. So there's lots of ways to get plugged in for that specific action. That would be great. And just going back to the invitation that Liz threw out for getting involved in the wonderful ways that Decarcerate shows up for this community, it's a great way, especially following their socials, of following the ways to get plugged in. There's also Social Justice Politicor. It's another fabulous community-based organization that tries to demystify the process of being involved in our local government. And so checking out their website, and they have community meetings once a month where people can show up and learn more about actions as they come up in the community.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Corrine McIntosh Seiko and Liz Blum, I want to thank you so much for providing our listeners with, you know, data and information about what is happening in the Sacramento County jails, why these injustices need to be remedied, what can be done, taking action on December 7th, getting involved with Decarcerate Sacramento and other grassroots organizations that are really doing the heavy lifting to change our culture and change our society and change our system so that less and less people are incarcerated and more people are healthy and living productive and meaningful lives in our community, because that's what we have to be constantly thinking about and building towards. Is there anything you want to say to our listeners before we close?
Just thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening, and thank you for your interest in this topic.
With that, folks, I also want to thank you for listening. We hope our ongoing conversations spark understandings, empathies, and motivation to join the struggle for a better future for all. Take care, folks. Building Justice Podcast. The information contained in this episode represents the views and opinions of the hosts and the guests and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Sacramento State or Chris J.
All the penalties and the rewards based on the actions. Now, time for building justice. Building justice. Time for-